Great art galleries are established in order that the beauty and culture of one century may be preserved for the next. Gems of literature are collected to add to the joy of future generations. Exquisite harmonies are carved in unforgettable languages in order that all mankind may be benefited by their loveliness of tone and depth of feeling. In similar manner, the recording of the address to which you will soon have the privilege of listening is an attempt to give a greater number of people the opportunity to hear the voice of George Washington Carver. He was the humble Negro slave who rose to such eminent heights that the President of the United States paused in the midst of directing a world conflict to pay homage to him in death. One of the world's greatest industrialists sent a blanket of flowers to cover his grave. Born of slave parents in Diamond Grove, Missouri, in 1864, George Washington Carver battled through a multitude of handicaps to become a world-renowned scientist. Because of large and varied contributions to human welfare, too numerous to mention in this brief space, more than 75 books and articles have been written on the life and achievements of Dr. Carver. He addressed national and international groups of importance. His life and character have been portrayed upon the screen. He was made a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts in England. The famous Gallery of Luxembourg in Europe requested one of his paintings. He received distinguished medals and large financial awards for meritorious services to mankind. He had degrees conferred upon him by great universities. He counted among his friends presidents and great financiers. And he lived and died amidst it all, a humble Christian gentleman whose life was a shining example of interracial goodwill. A life that transcended bounds of circumstance, of race and creed, to serve his fellow man. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. George Washington Carver.
Two things have come to my desk recently that have impressed me greatly and seem to fit into this occasion admirably, as they enable us to most accurately review the past, better understand the present, and forecast the future with a greater degree of accuracy. The first appeared in the Montgomery Advertiser, captioned "Living Today." The other, a book written by Victor H. Obermeyer, entitled "Here Comes Tomorrow." Both of these trite truisms are ever before us. We must face them. What are you, I, and all the rest of us going to do about it? The day is here. Tomorrow is lightening up the distant horizon with new and unheard of gleams, fraught with almost unlimited possibilities for everyone who is prepared to do what the world wants done. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Now that we are in, possibly, the greatest conflict the world has ever known, to me it becomes more of a personal matter than mere glittering generality. Oh, that every individual would follow Solomon's advice to his son. My son, get wisdom. Wisdom is the principal thing, but with all thy getting, get understanding. Again he says, a wise man is strong, yea, a man of knowledge increaseth in strength. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroyeth much good. The above advice is just as applicable today as when first uttered. We are the architects of our own fortune and the hewers out of our own destiny. Let us hope that none of you belong in the following classes, as per a recent canvas of 76 of our largest industrial corporations, as to why the individual lost his job. A. 14% was due to carelessness. B, 11% was due to lack of cooperation. C, 10% laziness. D, 8% absence from work for causes other than illness. E, 8% for dishonesty. F, 8% nearly had no initiative. With the above before us, we are forced to believe also that the following may be added to life's greatest truism. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. As you sow, so shall you reap. All Christian people speak the same language and live the golden rule way of life, and do not permit hate to poison both mind and body, rendering it impossible to get real joy out of life. That is, we must not do to any human being a single thing that we would not be willing to have them do to us. It is asking too much of the great creator of all things to revise the whole order of nature to accommodate our ignorance or willful misunderstanding. The fundamental law of the universe is to reap what we sow. If we sow oats, we expect to reap oats. If we plant corn, we do not expect to reap potatoes. I close with this bit of poetry, author unknown, entitled Equipment. Figure it out for yourself, my lad. You've all that the greatest of men have had. Two arms, two hands, two legs, two eyes, and a brain to use if you would be wise. With this equipment, they all began. So start to the top and say, I can. Look them over, the wise and great. They take their food from the commonplace. And similar knives and forks they use. With similar laces to tie their shoes. The world considers them brave and smart, but you've all they had when they made their start. You can triumph and come to steal. You can be great if you only will. You're well equipped for what fight you choose. You've legs and arms and a brain to use. And a man who has risen great deeds to do began his life with no more than you. You are the handicap, you must say. You are the one who must choose your place. You must say where you ought to go, how much you will study the truth to know. God has equipped you for life, but he lets you to decide what you want to be. Courage must come from the soul within. The man must furnish the will to win. So figure it out for yourself, my lad. You are born with all that the great has had. With your equipment, they all began. Get hold of yourself and say, I can.
The address to which you've been listening was Dr. Carver's last public address. It was prepared for the 59th annual commencement at Selma University. Dr. Carver died in Tuskegee Institute, January 5th, 1943, at the age of 79.